Welcome, everyone. This is Angela Franklin, and I have here with me Sarah Fanta. And they're respectively, I'm the senior director on the project. Sarah's the project manager for the project. And this is the Behavioral Health Project Work Group 2, our first call for this project. So welcome. And today we're focusing on the alcohol measures. And I wanted to real quick do a quick roll call. And I'll start with Dr. Robert Robin, Jeffrey Samet, David Pating, Mandy Chalk,
here,
Madeline Nagel,
here.
All right, I thought I heard some other folks join. I just wondered, have I not called someone who's also on the
line? There are other names on the list that I see in front of me.
Michael Lardier. Tammy Mark.
Here.
Jeffrey Sussman. Jeffrey Sussman, no. Good. Okay.
I see Eric Gopplerud's name on it.
What yes, he's on. I heard him call in.
Here. I'm here.
Oh, okay. Great, thanks. So if we have, at this time, if we have measure developers on the line, would you please announce yourself and your affiliation?
This is Linda Hanold from the Joint Commission.
And Nancy Lawler from the Joint Commission.
Okay.
Eric Gopplerud, NORC.
Okay.
This is Jeremy Gottlich from NCQA.
Any others on the line? Okay, thank you. And I just wanted to see, I wanted to double check to see if we had a Dr. Robert Robin or Jeffrey Sussman on the line. Dr. Michael Lardier? All right, well, we'll go ahead and get started in the interest of time. On our agenda, our first measure is 1661. However, we don't have a measure developer. We don't have our discussant for that one right now. So we're going to skip down.
No, we can go ahead. Actually, everyone did go ahead, even though they're not here on the phone. Some people did inform us that they wouldn't be able to make it. We did have everyone fill out the SurveyMonkey link, so we can go ahead. If anyone on the line, I know you weren't assigned it, but if you would feel comfortable kicking off the discussion for Measure 1661, at this time I'll also be projecting the scores from the SurveyMonkey. If anyone is having trouble with webinar, please let me know.
It's so small, I can't read.
That's right.
Okay. Better? Oh, actually, on the webinar screen, if you want to hit maximize, which is in the top right-hand corner, that should help a little bit.
Yeah, it does a little bit. Okay.
Okay. So according
it's cut off. We only go to column B.
Oh, yes. I'll scroll over as we move through the discussion.
Go through the whole thing as we have the discussion.
Oh, I don't know. What are we saying here? Importance is high.
Okay, so starting off here, it looks like everyone in your work group who evaluated the measure deemed this to be important. Would anyone like to take on the discussion of this measure to kick it off?
Yes, and just before we dive into the discussion, I just wanted to let everyone know that we're on the call today. We're going to be going through these as initial and preliminary discussion, and we will be doing our final votes at the in-person, at which time we'd like the lead discussant to lead that discussion, and then the work group lead discussion about their feelings and recommendations for the measures. So please, with that said, if we could have someone begin discussion of 1661, you may review it at this time. I think
Well, this is Mady, so I'm happy to start.
Thanks, Mady.
I think this is a particularly important measure and particularly important for hospitalized patients. In any kind of hospital unit, whether it's on a med-surg unit or in a trauma center or elsewhere, we have plenty of data and plenty of research that makes it clear that alcohol use and unhealthy use and overuse and use at all, actually, for a hospitalized patient has an impact on treatment and management of any other condition that they may be hospitalized for. So it's a process measure, but it can have very alcohol overuse, misuse, unhealthy use can have very serious consequences, not only in and of itself, but for other chronic conditions. And I think the research supports that. I understand why the developers left for this measure and for the rest of these measures decided to exclude people who are cognitively impaired, but I have questions about that, particularly for this measure. I'm not absolutely convinced.
Okay. Okay, and we do have the measure developers on the line if you'd like to respond to that. Nancy?
Yes, we felt that when you're screening if someone was impaired, that you know they wouldn't be able to respond accurately, and so it wasn't not going to be you were not going to really be able to get an accurate assessment of the use status.
All right, I get it.
So this is Madeline Nagel. The only other thing I would add to that is that we do have some concern about older people, and they may have some mild cognitive impairment, which really wouldn't rule them out from being screened for this. My sense of the exclusion criteria was that we were concerned about people who were intoxicated, who had some developmental delays, or who were actively psychotic. These are all people who would not be appropriately screened.
This is Nancy. That's correct. And although those that come in that are in acute intoxication, we excluded them from the cognitive impairment because we felt that, you know, they're acutely intoxicated at the time that they come in, and then that's going to wear off, and you can go back and you can screen those people.
Right.
And so they are excluded from this definition of cognitive impairment. Someone who is, you know, just mildly, you know, like you mentioned, an older person, I don't think that, you know, the cognitive impairment was meant to deal with that type of person.
Okay.
Yes, but of course, that's one of the issues with a number of these subcomponents of this measure. And that is that we are not adequately screening older adults. So trying to, we would still like to be able to use a measure with older adults, despite the fact that they may have mild cognitive impairment.
I see.
Yeah, I would extend that discussion to patients with psychoses. Patients with psychoses may, you know, come in similarly to patients who are intoxicated, and then, you know, with treatment, gain some insight and the role that substance use plays in treatment outcomes for patients with schizophrenia and psychoses is so critical, and I wouldn't want to miss those patients being screened because, you know, their admission they were cognitively impaired, but you know, potentially, you know, at discharge they were able to have a discussion that involved screening.
That's a good point.
Yeah, you know, this is Nancy. Can I make a comment? You know, we grappled with that whole issue because, you know, cognitive impairment is something that obviously might be transient, can get better, just as you've mentioned. And the reason that we spec'd it out this way was to address the burden of data collection and the implementation of the measure. And, you know, our thought was that if you screen the person one time, except for that acute intoxication person, that when you screen them, if they were cognitively impaired, we were going to exclude you, and we weren't going to make the person that is implementing these or whatever, abstracting, have to go back again and do this and keep doing it until the person resolves that cognitive impairment or may not. So it was an issue of sort of trying to balance that with the burden of implementation of this and the burden of abstraction.
Yes, I think there's also, Dr. Nagel, I just want to mention that in terms of provider burden, the person who is actively psychotic in the setting where these screening measures are meant to be used, which are primarily primary care and hospitalization medical units, in the emergency room, that person is going to be hopefully quickly transferred to specialist evaluation, in which case the specialist, a psychiatric nurse practitioner or a psychiatrist, will evaluate appropriately, hopefully, for substance use when the individual is stabilized. So I don't know that we would necessarily lose that population from being screened ultimately.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the question. I mean, they may not be screened in the ER, but, you know, quality of care would hope that they were screened when they were transferred to a psych unit or a bed. And would that
yes.
be captured in the abstraction?
Or seen in consultation, because the usual order of affairs would be that a specialist will be called to consult and will do a full evaluation.
And so would that be picked up in a measure, or would those folks be excluded?
Oh.
Would you know that occurred?
That's a question for the developers.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Would you know that it occurred that somebody was, that there was a consult and the person was evaluated by somebody else?
Well, in review of the entire record, and as you're evaluating this for all of the measures in the set, you would come by that information probably when you're collecting the data elements for sub 3, which addresses those people with dependence or alcohol or drug disorder, which really requires more of an assessment than you can determine. I mean, it's a diagnosis, and so
yeah.
Our technical advisory panel felt that screening wasn't going to get to the point of a diagnosis, that you really needed to have a further assessment.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you would pick it up because we collect all of these data elements together as a set.
Nancy, this is Eric Opplerud. If I
can
expand just a little bit on that.
Mm-hmm.
The denominator is all hospitalized inpatients, except for those that are too cognitively distressed. You know, there's some exceptions. So it is a hospital responsibility, not a specific provider responsibility. So if there was a specialty consult or a transfer to any particular inpatient unit, the responsible entity is the hospital for making sure that the SBI is done.
So how does that cognitive impairment exclusion get implemented in practical terms by the hospital?
Well, it is a the data element itself is just a yes-no data element. So there is a question whether or not the hospital is cognitively impaired. In the data dictionary, if you have it and it's printed out for you, there's a definition of cognitive impairment. And, you know, the abstractor makes a decision, or, you know, whoever is, this is the abstraction for the data element, but whoever is asking the questions, the person who is screening, obviously if the person can't answer the questions, and is so confused or is obtunded, maybe they're just they're totally in a coma. Obviously, you know, you can't get the answers to them. They can't be screened, and they can document that, and then the abstractor knows, and they can answer yes to cognitive impairment.
So I think it comes down to what the instructions are for the abstractor, to what they look for to determine that the person is too cognitively impaired. You know, and I guess so if you had some instructions that said if the person, you know, was unable to respond and that's noted in the record, that's what you would include. That would be one thing. But if you had another thing that said, you know, any signs of Alzheimer's or, you know, dementia, you know, exclude, that would be something else. So it seems like you could address this in the instructions you gave.
Do you all have the data dictionary there?
No.
Okay.
So.
In review of the measure, did you receive it?
Yes, we did receive it.
Okay, so there was, and I'm just going to pull out my specs right now, because let me just speak to it, and then, you know, if there are issues, we can address them. But I'm going to look at the data element page, and let me just read. Would you like me to read you the definition? Okay, it says, well, first of all, it just says cognition refers to mental activities associated with thinking, learning, and memory. Cognitive impairment for the purposes of this measure set related to documentation that the patient cannot be screened for tobacco and alcohol use due to the impairment. For example, comatose, obtunded, confused, memory loss. There are some inclusion guidelines that we give, which says if you see these documented, cognitive impairment, cognitively impaired, confused, memory loss, mentally retarded, obtunded, those would be inclusions. Of course, going back to the definition that says, you know, they just can't answer these questions correctly. And then the exclusion, as I mentioned earlier, was the temporary cognitive impairment due to acute substance use, because, you know, we wanted you to go back at least for those folks, and once that got better, do the screening then. Eric, do you have anything to say?
Hi, this is David Beating. Can I ask who goes back and does the screening? Do you see this as a nursing function? I know the hospital is responsible for this, but in some hospitals, they might not have the right skill level on the floor to make this. This is a diagnosis. I mean, it sounds like there's almost a diagnostic quality to the impairment.
No, this is screening,
no.
And it's to be done with a validated tool. So you use a tool like the Audit C. The assist, the tweak, you know, the MAST, one of those validated tools, and so it can be administered by a nurse. It does not have to be administered by a physician.
There is no diagnosis at this level, David.
No. I think in terms of the issue of cognitive impairment, that's what I'm just. So I get the point. Who makes the assessment of cognitive impairment? Is it just that you can't do the 10? Are you adding an 11th question to the MAST, basically, and then, which is, you know, is there cognitive impairment and they can't complete this? Is that what you're doing?
Well, we're saying that if someone is trying to ask someone, you know, how they're drinking or what their use is, and they're not able to respond, that, you know, and they're obviously cognitively impaired, then, you know, you would document that's someone that you can't screen.
Yeah, we were I don't know if you were on at the beginning of the call, David. I raised the question about the exclusion of people who were cognitively impaired. That's how we had this discussed this.
You know, I understand that. And okay, I'll catch up. Thank you.
Were there any other comments regarding the importance of the issue? I'm pretty sure that according to everyone's preliminary evaluation, every person in the work group deemed this to be important to measure and report. And I think Mady did a really great job outlining the key issues. So does anyone else have any kind of comment around the importance before we move on to the scientific acceptability of the measure?
I think it's very important and has high impact and very timely.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, we better keep moving.
Any other comments? Okay, so we'll go on and move to the scientific acceptability portion, as this measure did pass so far for discussion-wide the importance criteria. So we'll go ahead. Does anyone have any comments on the reliability and validity of the measure properties?
It's Madeline Nagel. The science is very strong in support of this measure.
Okay.
I just wanted to say that the Kappa statistic was very low. And it seemed to be, I think, the issue, you know, it is felt that it was not a big deal because once there was training, it would rise. So, you know, that's a little bit of a caveat. The other issue that I was a little concerned or wanted to hear more about was the fact that in some settings they used a non-validated tool as pre-screening, and then if, you know, if there seemed the person did drink at all, then they would use the validated tool, and there seemed to be some issue with how to handle that and whether that would be considered, you know, screening or not, I guess.
So I just want to mention that the National Institutes of Alcohol and Alcohol Abuse in the Clinician's Guide recognize and support the notion of one question about the number of times a month a person drinks more than five drinks. They use one question as a beginning screener. They don't consider it screening, but they then proceed, they recommend proceeding to the audit C or the audit. So it is a fairly common practice to use that. I have greater concern about the level of training to be able to discern the choice about using a validated tool. So I would agree with the point that you just raised about some concern about asking one question in areas where that is not it's not generally followed by the use of a validated screener.
Right, and so the issue is making sure that people are abstracting, recognize that would be considered screening if someone was asked one question and not asked a follow-up question.
That it would not be considered screening.
It would be considered screening if someone was asked the first question and not the second because they didn't need the audit.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Any other comments around the reliability in the statement? Numerator or denominator details?
And again, just to go back into everyone, the work group's preliminary votes, everyone in the work group did deem this measure to be scientifically acceptable and to have adequate reliability and validity results. So with that being said, if there's no more comments around the scientific acceptability of the measure, we can go ahead and move on to the usability portion, which is the extent to which the audiences, consumers, purchasers, providers, and policymakers can understand the results of the measure and are likely to find them useful for decision-making. Were there any specific comments around the usability of the measure? Going back to the preliminary evaluations, we had three individuals rank this as being high, one as moderate, and one as insufficient. So I believe, Tammy, you had rated it as insufficient. Do you want to express maybe some of your concerns around the usability of the measure?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it was just an issue of not, it's not clear to me, it's not available in electronic form, so someone has to go in and abstract the data. And I guess that's part of the Joint Commission process, so maybe it's not a big deal to do that.
Well, this is Nancy, and if I can make another comment, you know, the Joint Commission is currently in the process of creating the electronic specifications for Sub 1 and Sub 2. We've already done the modeling. We have the concepts down. We'll be doing the test cases this week, and then following that come the value sets. So this all should be done for these two measures by the end of May.
Okay. That's great
to know. This is Eric Opplerud. Also, we are finding that many hospitals are building this into their EHRs so that it's being built into, in a number of places, it's being built into Epic, which is a really pervasive EHR software, so that the instruments themselves, the scoring, and the brief interventions or treatment initiation are all part of the electronic record and therefore can be abstracted.
So it's Madeline Nagel. I'll just again go back to a point which has come up in other committees for the Quality Forum, and I think it's an issue that we're continuing to try to deal with. But we have, when we look at the science base, we have a very weak base for using the measure with what we consider to be vulnerable minority groups, also older adults and women, so that the sample and the primary sample we're drawing for all four of these would appear to be, in VA certainly, predominantly male. And I think we need to continue. We can't really change that right now, and I don't mean that to take away the validity of going forward on any of these initiatives, because I strongly support them. But I think it's important to note that in taking this forward, that we begin to communicate to our providers, institutions, that data needs to be gathered in these groups which have disparate access to treatment for alcohol and other drug problems.
Madeline, I agree with that with one caveat. That's true for the VA. The research that's been conducted on screening measures, other than through the VA, has included Medicaid and so significant numbers of minority and other groups with disparities, and as well as women. So that is true for the VA, but that is not the only place that this measure has been tested.
So the developer did not speak to that. I mean, we would assume that certainly we've gotten some older folks in the Medicare group and certainly a mix in the Medicaid group, but the developer doesn't really make a point of that. And I think the more it's in the discussion, the more we will continue to have it as something we need to improve in our data collection.
I agree with you.
Yeah, and I would say that the main source of the evidence is this Cochrane Collaboration Review, which I thought was very well done. It includes, 11 randomized trials in hospitals. But they do point out that, as you say, almost all the studies are done on men, and we need more evidence on women. And
well, been said,
other groups,
a single piece of research that's come through the NIH.
What? Sorry, Nate, I didn't hear that.
Never mind. That was a snide comment.
Monday morning snide.
Yeah.
Does the developer have anything additional to say around those populations that were discussed?
This is Nancy, and I don't. I think we cited. I have to go back and look at the submission, but I think we talked about Whitlock, Kaner, McQueen, which was in the hospital setting, plus the VA, and all of the reviews that were done by the VA. There's just a multitude of individual studies that have been done, and I guess it was my understanding that what the NQF was looking for was really more of a systematic review of the evidence. So I don't know, Eric, do you have anything that you want to add?
We're in the process of having a systematic review of the evidence of screening and brief intervention for geriatric populations in EDs being done this month. It won't be available to the end of this month.
Great.
Thanks, Eric.
Any other comments around the usability of the measure? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to the final criterion, which is feasibility, the extent to which the required data are readily available, retrievable without undue burden, and can be implemented for performance measurement. Looking at the work group's ratings, it appears that everyone rated this moderate except for one person rated this as high. So does anyone have any comments around the feasibility of the measure?
It's Madeline Nagel again. The only comment I would make about it is, and everybody in the advisory group is aware of it, and probably most of the people on this call, is that while we see in the abstract it should be feasible, and when we're looking at the studies that support taking forth this measure, we see that it's feasible, but in reality, we don't have very good follow-up in the clinical setting. So I would say, and I think probably I mark this as moderate, that I think this is something that we hope to gain some momentum on, and I certainly think it should be feasible. We don't really understand the organizational and provider issues that have not supported its wider use.
While I consider it feasible, I also consider that the purpose of having these measures and of having requiring some accountability is something that drives improvements in quality. So that I would hope and I would expect actually that having a measure like this would drive quality improvement on its use.
Great. Any other comments around the feasibility of this measure? Okay. So based on the work group's evaluation of this measure, everyone seemed to agree that it met all of the criterion and that it would, in fact, it would have been recommended for NQF endorsement. So, of course, we'll take this discussion back to the steering committee, which, you know, they'll discuss it during the April 17th and 18th meeting. So I think we have a really good head start on this measure. So we're going to go ahead now and move on to measure 1663, which I'll pull up on the screen. And I don't believe that Jeffrey's on the phone right now, so we may need someone else to give a brief overview of the measure. Let me pull up the... Okay, so this is measure 1663. It's sub 2, alcohol use brief intervention provided or offered, and sub 2A, alcohol use brief intervention from the Joint Commission. Does anyone want to give an overview, or perhaps maybe the measure developer can give us a brief introduction to this measure?
Okay, this is Nancy. So since no one is speaking up, I guess you're wanting the developer to give you an overview. I guess in your overview, I'm not really sure what you want. I can tell you what the measure is, and then if you want to launch into a discussion about importance or evidence, we can do that. Is that how you'd like
great.
Me to proceed? Oh, okay. So this particular measure, sub 2, looks at, for all of those people who screen positive for unhealthy alcohol use, that they are provided with a brief intervention. And in sub 2, those people that refuse, you may try to provide the intervention, but they just tell you that, you know what, I'm not interested, please go away, don't talk to me, whatever. We do give credit, and that kind of a case will flow to the numerator because the hospital tried to do the right thing. What sub 2 does is sub 2A allows only those that received the intervention to go to the numerator, so that you know, you can see when you're looking at sub 2A only those people who actually received the brief intervention. The refusals are not included in the numerator. We do have a definition of brief intervention, if you want me to go over that before we begin the discussion. I'm going to pull it up here. We call this a single interaction between the qualified healthcare professional and the patient following a positive screening for a result of unhealthy alcohol use or alcohol use disorder. A brief intervention focuses on increasing the patient's understanding of the impact of the substance of use on his or her health and motivating the patient to change the risky behaviors. The components of the intervention include feedback and concerning the quantity and frequency of alcohol consumed by the patient in comparison with national norms, a discussion of the negative physical, emotional, and occupational consequences, and a discussion of the overall severity of the problem. The qualified healthcare professional engages the patient in a joint decision-making process regarding alcohol use, and plans for follow-up are discussed and agreed to. We have several notes for abstraction, but I won't go through those unless you have any questions, but that's really the crux of what we want someone to sit down, we want someone to have an interaction with the patient and talk about the problem and how it's impacting their health, their life, and try to come up with some kind of plan to bring them back into either what would be acceptable use or obviously abstinence or not using at all.
Right.
So with that, I'll just turn it back to you all, and we can begin to discuss the measure.
Thanks. Thank you very much. So we will move on then to the impact, opportunity, and evidence, so part of the importance to measure and report. So was there any discussion around whether or not this was an important area to measure and whether or not there was evidence to prove that this was an important area to measure? Does anyone on the work group have any comments about this section?
No, I would simply reinforce that it's a very important area to measure. It's Madeline. We're very aware that many, many of our patients, and it's well cited, have never received any screening or discussion about this. It's well substantiated in the literature. We need to begin to look at this from a clinical perspective.
Other comments?
Although it's important, I had actually some serious questions about its utility in an inpatient set. I understand potentially the utility, which I didn't have about some of the other measures, by the way. I saw the value in some, higher value in some of the other measures than this one. So it's, I just had some real issues about what brief intervention if a patient is in the hospital for anything, some diabetic issue or a heart attack, whether a brief intervention is what is called for. The screening is certainly called for. The brief intervention, I wasn't sure. So.
So I know that some people from our advisory panel are on. I know Eric's on. We do have some research on using brief interventions with tobacco use in this realm. And I'm wondering if we, you know, other than the immediate data that were cited from the studies in hospital-based SBIRT samples and the VA, if anyone has any insight into how effectively this has been used across the board for alcohol.
I didn't think the Cochrane review, the McQueen review, was just limited to the VA.
No, it isn't. It is, there are several other hospitals. But those were hospitals also where they had been using and been training to use ESPRT. So the sample was somewhat biased, in as much as you had groups that were motivated, interested, and incentivized. That is open to discussion, I imagine.
So it's more of a fidelity issue than a effectiveness issue?
Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
Any other comments around the importance? It seems that everyone agrees this is an important area. Maidy, were all your questions about this answered at this point?
Yeah, they're answered.
Sure. Okay, great. So we'll move on then to the scientific acceptability of this measure, particularly the reliability and validity. So the extent to which the measure as specified produces consistent, reliable, and credible, valid results about the quality of care when implemented. So this measure must demonstrate adequate reliability and validity in order to be recommended for endorsement. So this measure was tested. Are there any comments around the testing results or the reliability or validity of the measure? It seems as though in this area that the work group was split with half believing that this criterion was met and half believing that it was not. So if there's any comments around this, feel free.
I'd like to hear from people who felt that the criteria was not met.
All right. Well, I think actually two of them are not on the phone, but I can read their rationale that they submitted. One of them said the idea of what a brief intervention is unclear. However, Nancy, I believe you covered that well in the beginning. The ability to measure this in practical terms and the fidelity of such interventions is unclear. I'm not convinced that the measure can be used effectively with large populations of differing types of hospitals. And then we had another one that said, this seemed to be rather difficult to assess, at least in the pilot testing that was performed. There was a great deal of variation among hospitals regarding the uptake of this BI among screen-positive patients. Nicely, half had EMRs and half did not, more or less. That does not reflect necessarily on whether or not an electronic screening and BI or B1 occurred.
But those things are also those questions seem to be more about feasibility than actually about the data that was presented in the scientific studies.
Yeah. There was one more comment, actually, that was in regards to the low Kappa statistic. Familiarity with the measure specifications and implementation and use of the measure should correct this issue, however. Ongoing validation will be implemented by contracted measure system vendors and results sent to the Joint Commission so that validity issues can be addressed. So it seems as though, although the Kappa statistic was low, there could be things that could remedy that.
Yeah.
I think, this is Nancy, from our pilot testing, again, the primary issue when you read this was that, you know, because we were so prescriptive about what had to be included in a brief intervention, that, you know, we didn't, when we went out and I went out to all these pilot sites and re-abstracted the records, and so, you know, when we had a non-match, it was usually because, you know, the hospital would give themselves credit for doing a brief intervention, but they didn't cover all the things that they were supposed to cover, or at least that we said needed to be part of that brief intervention. And we just really felt like that was a learning curve thing, that once people get familiar with the specifications, they know what we're expecting, that that rate is going to, you know, that's going to come up, and people will implement it correctly, because they want to get credit for what they're doing. So, you know, I realize that the Kappa statistic is low and that the reliability issues that are there, but we really feel that this is correctable.
Yes, I do have some concern about provider burden on that, just because that's kind of where we are with the general implementation of the ACA, and I really think that that is going to continue to be a concern. I don't think that's not a reason. I don't think that's a reason to not support the measure. But I think the very things that you cited about the learning curve and the need to get people up to speed and the fidelity of implementation will be a concern.
And this is Tammy. Do you also think that this is an evidence issue, that defining, you know, exactly what needs to be done to make brief interventions effective is not necessarily clear, so it can't be?
I feel that the evidence, so you'll notice that apparently some of the evidence that has also influenced this subgroup of four comes from brief interventions, again, with tobacco. I think that there's a lot of intervention that the elements of the brief intervention can be implemented in 3 to 5 minutes by an experienced provider, or that the individual is not going to participate in one way or another. There is a good bit of evidence in the literature supporting that. So I don't think it's a reason to not go forward.
So, I mean, that would argue that you know, you should have the key element. Reading this, it says the key issue is that, you know, as you said, some instances it didn't seem like they used all the elements that they needed to for the brief intervention. So it wasn't scored as being done, and that would be consistent with the evidence that you should use all the components to get credit for.
Yes, yes.
Right.
But I think that's an innovation issue, and something that's kind of characteristic of this kind of organizational change and our expectations about it.
Yeah.
Any other comments around the scientific acceptability? All right, and then we will move on to the usability portion, which is the extent to which intended audiences can understand the results of the measure and are likely to find them useful for decision making. Looking at the work group, it appears that the majority voted this criterion as moderate, and there were 2 individuals who voted this criterion as low. So one of the individuals who actually, again, isn't on the phone, I'll just read his rationale, and it says, this would require a new checkbox, and he's skeptical of documenting such an intervention without an EHR, and the mindless checking of a box on the EHR does not mean effective intervention occurs.
I think those are realistic points. I just don't see them as deal breakers.
Then we had one more comment, again, an individual who couldn't make it today. And it says, again, the feasibility of capturing this data. Oh, sorry, this is for. Oh, I'm sorry, that was for feasibility. Go ahead. Anyone else for the usability criterion?
I guess this is Nancy again, and if I could just make a comment. And I know, you know, how everybody's feeling about the checkbox issue, and we at the Joint Commission feel exactly the same way, and that's why we tried to make these specifications much more robust than what we had seen before when we had our old tobacco cessation measures, because you could just check a box or give somebody a brochure. This requires that, and it needs to be documented, that, you know, someone is sitting down and actually having a one-on-one discussion with the patient, and that all of these parameters are discussed. So, you know, even if you're checking a box, you're going to have to at least check the box that, you know, you sat down and talked to this person and that you covered this point, this point, this point, and this point. You know, I don't know how else to address that, because outside of, you know, doing observational type of studies and work to see whether or not, you know, this is really carried out, I don't know how else we could achieve this.
This is Eric. Also, I have seen some of the EHRs that are being built have more than a checkbox in them. They have on their checkbox, it says these are the characteristics of what you need to have done.
Right, exactly.
Right. I mean, it still doesn't say that you couldn't check it off, but it, at least you've checked off something that says, I discussed the following issues with the client, and we developed a plan, and this is what we've agreed to.
Okay, great. Any other comments on the usability? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to the feasibility criterion. And that is the extent to which the required data are readily available, retrievable without undue burden, and can be implemented for performance measurement. So we kind of already delved into this topic a little bit with the checkbox issue and the EHRs, but if anyone has any additional comments to add about the feasibility, feel free. Okay, hearing none, that sounds good, and we will be sure to take all of your discussion points to the steering committee, and again, you all have a chance to present at that meeting. So based on the preliminary evaluation of this measure, it would have actually been equally divided. Half the people said it was suitable for endorsement, and half said it wasn't, so perhaps some points of the discussion would have swayed people one way or another.